The first element of this story is learning to tell it. And so getting the structure of the story in mind is the first and most essential step in doing that. This is a very clearly structured story. The first two periods or sentences are the setup: Capernaum and the centurion who had a slave. The second part is the delegation of the elders, that he sent elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come, and they appealed to Jesus, their speech. The third part is the friends who come and report what the centurion said, probably in the centurion's voice. And the fourth is Jesus' response, his amazement, and then the healing, the report on the healing of the slave. So the story has four episodes, and the setup, the elders, the friends, and Jesus' response. So it's an easy story to remember if you think about it in that structure. The dynamics of the story. The elders of the Jews appeal to Jesus. The tone, then, of their saying when they came to him is, first of all, some kind of Israelite accent. I don't know what that would be, but it should be different than the accent of the friends of the centurion, who clearly had Roman accents and style. So the centurion is a typical gruff sergeant type, and so that defines the way in which his words are said. So there's a distinct difference between the elders and the centurion. And then Jesus' response at the end is Jesus' voice. And then at the beginning and the end is the voice of the storyteller, both describing the situation and then summarizing what happens at the end when they find the servant in good health. The context of this story is the Sermon on the Plain. Prior to this story is Jesus' long teaching to the people on a great multitude on the plain, a large level place. The structure of the sermon is the blessings and woes, then the section of love for enemies. Love your enemies. Do good for those who hate you. And then there is the section on not judging others. And then a tree is known by its fruit, and the two foundations. That's the structure of the sermon. So the primary shocking content in the sermon is love your enemies. This is an unprecedented teaching in the tradition of Israel and is the most shocking thing about Jesus' sermon. The context of Luke's audiences is that they were clearly addressed throughout the story as Judeans, as Pharisees, as scribes, as the disciples. But all of them, with the exception of the centurion, and are Israelites. And that's where this story ends, is Jesus turns to the crowd following him and says, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. So he's clearly talking to Israelites about this weird centurion who is so distinctive for his faith. But the context for Luke's audiences of Judeans is the Jewish-Roman War. Luke was probably composed in the 80s sometime. The war ended, the last fortress was overcome by the Romans in 73, the fortress at Masada. The temple was destroyed in 70, and that was the primary climax of the war, but it didn't really end until these final fortresses were subdued by the Roman army. For Israelites, the Jewish war was the greatest disaster in the entire history of Israel, and there was enormous resentment, hatred of the Romans. They were the final representatives of the Gentiles who had dominated Israel since the Babylonian conquest. So first it was the Babylonians, then it was the Persians, then it was the Egyptians, then it was the Syrians, then it was the Romans. So this history is in the background of this story. The centurion was the sergeant of the Roman army. The centurion meant, you know, was from a century. He had 100 men under his command. So he was the commander of 100 soldiers. This means that in Capernaum, there was a century of soldiers. Probably many of those soldiers were lived in the homes of the residents of Capernaum. They didn't generally set up separate camps. That happened sometimes. But more often than not, a group like this, 100, would live in people's homes. They were small houses. It was a major intrusion, and you had this enemy in your house. That was hated. The centurion clearly had his own house, but as the officer in charge, he would have had more money and would be able to rent a house and have his own slaves and so on to tend to him. The point of this story is that the centurion was an example of what Jesus was talking about in the sermon. That is, when Jesus said, love your enemies and do good for those who hate you, he then does it in doing good for this centurion and healing his slave. Now, the context of this story is reflected also in the story of Jesus' first sermon, in which he announces that the blessings of the kingdom of God were given first to a widow in Zarephath in the land of Sidon, enemy territory, and Naaman, the general of the Syrian army, another officer of an army of the oppressors of Israel, whom Elisha healed. And the response of the listeners in the synagogue in Nazareth was that they were so angry that they took him out to throw him over the hill and kill him. This story makes it clear that this is a highly controversial story and policy on the part of Jesus. But what it does is that this story makes it clear that Jesus isn't just talking about this. This is the first time that he actually does it. He does good for Israel's enemies. The degree to which this is politically controversial is revealed also by contemporary events in Israel. Yitzhak Rabin, when he negotiated the Oslo Peace Accords, now 20 years ago, he was within a year assassinated by a young student of the Talmud who was incited to assassination by his teacher. So this thing of doing good for and making peace with your enemies is highly controversial. The same is true in the United States and in all countries of the world. One of the ways you can alienate people is by speaking good and seeking to do good for your enemies. Well, this is then the context of Luke's audiences, that they were wrestling with this issue of what do we do in relation to the Gentiles, specifically the Romans, in the aftermath of this enormously tragic war and the hatred of Israelites by the Romans. That's the context. So what the elders then say about this centurion is really striking. These elders of the community of Israelites, of the Judean Jewish community in Capernaum, go to Jesus at the request of the centurion and ask Jesus to do something good for this centurion, to heal his slave. And what the elders say about him is utterly surprising. He is worthy of having you do this for him because he loves our people and he built our synagogue for us. Incredible in the context of the war. Clearly, the centurion both recognized and had come to love the people in the country that his army was occupying in the aftermath of Jesus' sermon. So the story is about what happened, say, in 32. The story is being told in the post-war context sometime in the 80s. But the same dynamics, indeed, if anything, even more hostile dynamics are present in the post-war context. And so this description of the centurion is shocking in the context of what Israelites had come to expect from Romans. The message, then, that the friends of the centurion give to Jesus are, if anything, even more striking. The implication, if they were friends of the centurion, is that they also were Romans or Gentiles, who he would have had in his house. No Jews would be in his house. No Jews would have been eating with him. If they would, they would have been ostracized. And the Roman centurion recognizes this. And so when the friends in the story speak, they speak in the voice of the centurion. So the tone of a military officer is the tone of then this speech. Lord, do not trouble yourself. I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof. Therefore, I did not even presume to come to you, but only speak the word and let my servant be healed. For I'm also a man set under authority with soldiers under me, and I say to one, go, he goes, and I say to another, come, and he comes. To my slave, do this, he does it. So what is important in telling the story, but also in hearing it, is the contrast between the words of the elders that are appealing earnestly to him and these statements by the centurion. Now, another dimension of what the centurion says is that he clearly recognizes the constraints that were present on Jesus, and that if he came under his roof, he would be not only defiled, according to the law, he would be made unclean, but also he would be discredited in the eyes of people in the community because he was consorting with the enemy. So his statement, "I'm not worthy to have you even come under my roof," is a recognition of his place in relation to Jesus. That is, he recognizes the separation between Israelites and Gentiles. So the amazement of Jesus at his faith is that this Roman soldier, an enemy, an officer of the occupation army, billeted in Capernaum, is one who has such confidence in Jesus that he speaks to him as one who has authority over unclean spirits and makes this immediate connection between Jesus giving orders to the unclean spirits and his giving orders to his soldiers. So Jesus' action in healing the servant then is telepathic. There's no description of Jesus saying anything or doing anything. He simply, apparently in the story, gives an unspoken order to the demon that possessed the servant, and when they came back to the house, he was okay. He was up walking. He was in good health. So the centurion's faith was then that all Jesus needed to do was to pay attention to this, give an order, and the servant would be healed. And he was right. So Jesus' first action then, in the aftermath of the Sermon on the Plain, his first action for the benefit of a Gentile, an enemy, was to heal the centurion's slave, a highly controversial action on the part of Jesus. That's what needs to be conveyed in telling this story. Now, this story also has major implications. Jesus is a Messiah who does not save Israel by killing Gentiles, by organizing an army. He rather saves Israel by doing good for Israel's enemies, by establishing a new framework of relationship between Jews and Gentiles. And that becomes the major theme running through the rest of the gospel, and especially then in the stories of the Acts of the Apostles that follows Luke's gospel in a straight line of continuity. This new relationship between enemies is then a sign of the kingdom of God. It is also a sign of the kingdom of God and the things that will lead to peace now. The implication is that Jesus is the Messiah of peace who shows by his actions and by his words the ways that will lead to peace and that will bring the kingdom of God. Jesus, the Messiah of peace. This is his story.